The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, The Color of Wealth. Asian Americans in the Triangle are lapping every ethnic group in terms of growth and household income, a trend that may soon redraw how businesses market their products and services in communities experiencing the demographic shift. And the story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Making a Difference. Across the Triangle, many towns are rapidly emerging as hubs of Asian American culture as the Asian population gains wealth at a rapid clip and makes an indelible impact on their communities. And this is written by Uma Bhatt. Sang-shul Choi's move to North Carolina in 1983 was made in haste. In South Korea, a military dictator had staged a coup, and the police were hunting down many of his friends protesting martial law. Colleges were shuttered, and Choi, who had only finished his freshman year before being drafted into the South Korean army, couldn't finish his degree. He'd always wanted to travel the world, but never imagined his situation would pan out like this. Choi was 23 years old and about to take the Scholastic Aptitude Test, a test for American high school students, and then, thousands of miles from home, he arrived on the brick-laden NC State University campus, looking to earn a bachelor's degree in engineering. At the time, he says, he was one of only 28 Korean students at the school. Choi says Asians were an anomaly, falling out of the scope of a dual-ended spectrum between black and white. We were like what I call this sub-minority, Choi says. Not anymore. As of July 2022, Asian Americans made up 8.9% of Wake County's population, the highest percentage in North Carolina, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. Orange County was second at 8.2% and Durham County fourth at 6%. Only Mecklenburg County at 6.7% had anywhere near the concentration of Asian Americans as the Triangle, and many are concentrated in prospering towns like Cary, where 20.3% of the population of 180,000 was of Asian descent, according to 2022 figures. Asian Americans are also filling the campuses of the universities that drive the Triangle, like NC State. Nearly four decades after Choi arrived, Asian Americans made up 13.5% of first-year students who enrolled in the fall of 2022. And across the Triangle, symbols of a ballooning Asian population can be found everywhere, from the items on grocery store shelves to new sports complexes. In many Triangle cities, not only has the Asian population grown, but so too have their wallets and purchasing power, reshaping the local business scene and municipal policy. At the Costco warehouse in Apex, freezer aisles are stocked with tubs of dahi, a type of home-style Indian yogurt, Korean beef dumplings, and milky Taiwanese brown sugar boba ice cream bars. A short drive away in Morrisville, jam-packed crowds of Indian-American residents shouted from stands as Major League Cricket played one of its inaugural games in a town park last month. And in neighboring Cary, the North Carolina Chinese Lantern Festival will once again take over the Cocobooth Amphitheater this winter. Choi, a vice president based out of then Nortel Network Corporation's office in Research Triangle Park, says he worked twice as hard as some of his peers when he was young, sometimes up to 18 hours a day, before launching two companies of his own. He often earned $250,000 to $500,000 in a year, well above the median household income in Cary, where he's lived with his wife, Juri, for the past three decades. At any time, I'm having a conference call on an airplane, transatlantic, middle of the night, anything, he says. Life was not there for me. Growing pockets. Choi had front row seats to witness the growth of the area's Asian population. Asian families have gradually punctuated the neighborhood Choi and his family moved into in 1995, a wealthy subdivision in Cary that was once mostly white. Between 1990 and 2000, the Asian population in the combined Raleigh-Cary and Durham-Chapel Hill areas more than doubled, and by 2010 sat at a little more than 85,000 individuals, according to a collaborative study by the UNC Asian American Center and Carolina Demography at the Carolina Population Center. As of 2020, that figure has almost doubled to more than 150,000 Asian individuals. The biggest driver of recent demographic shifts in the area is domestic and foreign-born migration from Asia and Latin America, says Nathan Dollar, executive director of Carolina Demography, especially as birth rates have declined substantially. The biggest growth has been in the Southeast since 1965, Dollar says. Why 1965? 1965 is an important date because we refer to this as post-1965 migration because in 1965, the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965 got rid of these really racist national origin quotas for letting in immigrants, which opened up immigration from Latin America and Asia in particular. While Asian population growth hasn't been consistent across all cities in the Triangle in the past decade, what has been consistent is a high and climbing Asian median household income. Asian median household income is more than $100,000 in cities including Apex, Cary, and Wake Forest, among others, surpassing white median household income over the past decade. In some cases, Asian households out-earned their counterparts even back in 2010. John Lee, CEO and founder of Holly Springs software company A New Go, remembers his parents taking on low-income jobs like seamstressing and social work while growing up in Cary in the 1980s. Now that I'm a business leader, I own the assets here, he says. I employ over 60 people and I'm the CEO of a software development company. I feel like I've lived the American dream. Lee, who is Taiwanese-American, went to Cary High School, where he described himself as feeling isolated and part of a separated minority, one of perhaps only 10 Asian-American students in his class. He went on to graduate Phi Beta Kappa from UNC Chapel Hill in 1989, where he founded the university's first Asian-American Student Association and earned his MBA at the University of Pittsburgh. Because I've been successful, I do have disposable income that I can spend, but also invest in the community, Lee says. I can support a lot of causes I probably could never have. It's given me a voice and a seat at the table that I would never have because the reason I can meet with the mayors and the town council and help drive the direction of his community is because I've been so successful. Like many Asian Americans, Lee used academic success as a launching pad for further success in the world of business. But the Asian American community is a broad one, representing a big swath of nations and backgrounds, and Dollar cautions against attributing Asian successes to biological factors or racial stereotypes, such as the idea that Asian Americans are inherently smarter. Everybody who falls into that category or identifies in that racial or ethnic group doesn't necessarily have the same economic characteristics, he says. That said, Asian and Pacific Islander migrants tend to be more positively self-selected on high skills. That makes sense. It's a much larger trip and much more difficult to migrate from Asia to the United States. High skills are measured by educational attainment, Dollar says. And 75% of those who identified as Asian in the Durham, Chapel Hill, and Raleigh-Cary areas held a bachelor's degree or higher in 2019, according to the UNC Asian American Center and Carolina Demography Study. Almost half had a master's degree or higher. That's compared to just 50% of the total population that had a bachelor's degree or higher in the same area and 20% of the total population that had an advanced degree. Morrisville Town Councilman Steve Rao, who became the Triangle's first Asian-American elected official in 2011, says that's been especially important as a booming technology and life sciences industry in the region remains hungry for educated, highly skilled workers. That, combined with the emergence of religious centers, authentic Asian food establishments, ethnic grocery stores, and proximity to top-ranked colleges like UNC and Duke, has pulled Asians toward the area and contributed to the rise of strong ethnic communities, he says. What a great place to raise families for new immigrants, Rao says. They can raise them in a region where they feel close to home because of the cuisine, the culture, the Bollywood dance performances, Diwali, Hindu Festival of Lights, Holi, Hindu celebration of love, colors, and the arrival of spring. Unlevel ground. Though Asians are not the only demographic group seeing upward mobility, Hispanic median income increased by an average of about 33% in the city's Triangle Business Journal's analysis referenced. Dollar says it's important to put numbers into context. There has been some upper mobility of second and third generation Latin Americans in the United States, he says, but keep in mind that 25% of Latino households in North Carolina are below the poverty line, which is almost twice as high as the state average. Still, Hispanic income has increased across the board more than black income, which saw more modest gains. In Cary, black median household income increased the most out of the cities in TBJ's analysis, climbing from $50,408 in 2010 to $94,002 in 2021, but that trails far behind Asian and white median household income in the town, which sat at $180,229 and $114,126 respectively the same year. There's no doubt that anti-black racism is woven so tightly into the fabric of the United States, Dollar says. African Americans across the board fare worse in the labor market and even with similar degrees, similar educational attainment. Changing institutional faces. The reality of the area's shifting demographics have come into play at educational and professional institutions in the area, where Asian undergraduate enrollment has seen a steady increase since 2013, more so than other minority groups. It's a similar story at secondary schools in the area. The share of Asian students at Wake County Public School System almost doubled between the 2009 to 2010 to 2022 to 23 school year to 11.6%. The share of Hispanic students also jumped to nearly 20%, but the share of black students fell slightly in that time frame. Major employers in the area, such as Wolfspeed, say they are also taking into account recent demographic shifts. As the demographic landscape evolves in the Durham area, we remain proactive in adapting our recruitment strategies to ensure that our workforce reflects the vibrant and changing community we are proud to be a part of, a spokesperson for Wolfspeed says. We are also conscious of the ongoing wealth shift in the area and are committed to playing a positive role in shaping a more equitable future. And Jill Boyle, a human resources leader at UNC Health, notes increased efforts to cast a wider net in recent years. We also try to make sure that we're recruiting those diverse audiences, she says. So we have some sourcing vendors that help us push our jobs out more broadly to all sorts of diverse sites. We go to HBCUs. Immigrants in particular are expected to plug workforce gaps as birth rates continue to decline. That was the consensus of a June gathering of state and federal officials, including the U.S. Department of Citizenship and Immigration Services in Durham. Officials cited an NC Commerce Department study, which found that immigrants have a higher labor force participation rate than native-born individuals. New consumer base. As the Asian population has grown, so has its economic impact, and businesses are adapting to these trends. The Costco in Apex, for example, sells items ranging from ghee, a type of Indian clarified butter, to Chinese-style sausage. One Indian-origin Cary resident, China Goli, says BJ's, where he used to shop, didn't have ethnic foods. Goli says that he still buys Indian groceries, snacks, and frozen foods from local Indian shops like Patel Brothers, but that he's now able to buy items like plain Indian yogurt and basmati rice from Costco and Apex. It helps to not have to go to multiple places to get things, Goli says. The Apex Costco is a targeted attempt to appeal to Asian consumers, a part of a broader strategy by the retailer to reach as many potential consumers as possible. Costco Wholesale's December 2022 annual report stated that the company's success depends in part on the ability to identify and respond to trends in demographics and consumer preferences. Failure to identify timely or effectively respond to changing consumer tastes, preferences, including those relating to environmental, social, and governance practices, and spending patterns could negatively affect our relationship with our members, the demands for our products and services, and our market share, the report stated. Beyond the realm of retail shelves, Indian Americans have crammed into local movie theaters to screen Indian blockbuster hits like Razi, 2018, and Fida, 2017. And Asian Americans have opened their own sports complexes, too. Triangle Badminton and Table Tennis, for example, has catered to a higher influx of Asian Americans since the owners repurposed the facility to include badminton courts, says Yu Chang, one of the two owners' sons. The facility used to only hold table tennis equipment, but badminton is a popular sport in Asia and among Asian Americans. I, myself, am Asian. My father is the owner of the facility, and we've been playing badminton in the Bond Park area, which had a recreational site for about 10 years before this facility opened up, he says. And I think during that time, the majority of players there were always generally like both East Asian and South Asian. Chang says the facility has catered to hundreds of players since, and membership at TBTT has increased tremendously since the change. Looking ahead. Migration into the area has and will likely continue to slow down in coming years, Dollar says, due to a combination of factors that include the Great Recession, strict Trump-era immigration policies, and the pandemic. But since Troy arrived on the NC State campus in 1983, the Triangle has transformed into a place where the Asian American impact is far more visible. Korean grocery chain H Mart arrived in Cary in 2016, and a slew of other Asian restaurants serving everything from Chinese hot pot to Korean barbecue have opened in the area too. In Morrisville, where Rao lives, residents throw huge blooms of colorful powder in the air each spring for the town's Park and Rec Holly event, and attend Diwali receptions in the fall. Council members even get regularly invited to events at local temples, Rao says, and the town also has a Nepal Day. Ya Liu, a freshman member of the North Carolina House from Cary, says Asian American interest in politics has grown too, with several Asian Americans running for town council seats and even state-level positions. Traditionally, the turnout and voter registration rates are low for Asian American communities, she says. But in recent years, we've seen this very rapid increase in terms of the registration rate as well as turnout rate. Jimmy Patel Gwynn, the director of communications at North Carolina Asian Americans Together, a local nonprofit dedicated to promoting civic engagement amongst Asian Americans in the area, says, "A lot of the Asian Americans in the area really do prioritize jobs and a strong economy. And so that is how they will be voting in the municipal elections and the 2024 elections coming up. Those are huge issues for them." Dollar also notes that many of the Asian families that have migrated to the United States are of younger, childbearing ages. "So it's that population that has higher birth rates," he says. "I want to dispel the myth that immigrants tend to have more babies. That's just not true. But as the general population gets older and fertility has declined, these groups comprise a larger share of the younger population. And so the population is going to get increasingly diverse, increasingly more Latino, increasingly more Asian." As for Choi, he's excited to attract and keep a younger generation of Asians in the Triangle. "We need the young, able-bodied," he says. "That's where Asian American society should focus." And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook as it's related to the cover story. This is written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, "As our wealth grows, so do our expectations." As you read reporter Uma Bhatt's deep dive on the wealth growth of Asians, whites, and Hispanics in the Triangle, just spare a second to think about the potential implications. The changes that await us are nothing short of seismic in nature, and the opportunities are boundless. But first, we have to understand the numbers. In a little more than 10 years, the Asian population has almost tripled in Morrisville and Apex and doubled in Cary. The numbers are still small when compared to whites, but the percentage increase is far greater than any ethnic group. As we have seen the Triangle grow in the past decade, anecdotally, we knew that. What we did not know, however, is the amount of wealth generated by this generation of Triangle citizens. In Cary, for example, where the Asian population has almost doubled from 2010 to 2021, the household income level for Asians jumped from $117,000 to $180,000. During the same time in the same town, the income level for whites rose from $95,000 to $114,000. For blacks, it was $50,000 to $94,000. And for Hispanics, it was $39,000 to $64,000. In other words, Cary has done very well for everyone. That story pretty much plays out in every corner of Wake County. In Raleigh, for example, while the household income for whites is still ahead of Asians, $90,000 to $88,000, but the almost 20% gap in 2010 is now near non-existent. So what does it all mean? It means an opportunity for businesses to sell their products and services to a growing sector of wealth creators. There are vast differences among ethnic groups when it comes to spending money. Add in the cultural, social, and economic differences, and a successful product that has sold very well for years may become obsolete if manufacturers, wholesalers, and retailers are not paying attention. Bhatt's story details how the Apex Costco is storing more food products that appeal to the Indians in the community. She cites Costco's annual report that states, "Failure to identify timely or effectively respond to changing consumer tastes, preferences, and spending patterns could negatively affect our relationship with our members, the demand for our products and services, and our market share." Custom and production home builders around the Triangle have worked with home buyers to structure new homes that cater to bigger families, including attached lodging for parents and grandparents, a nod to the largely prevalent Asian culture. For now, the new generation of Triangle residents buys products and services that are currently available in the marketplace, but as they grow their clout in population and wealth, they will swarm toward products, services, and events that represent their culture, and therein lies the opportunity for product makers and service offerers. There is another side to this story, however. The Triangle must demand the new class of wealth generators get involved in our communities and help with a variety of causes that need help in the form of money and sector expertise. Area doctors should find time to lend their time to clinics without charging poor patients. Technologists who have excelled in their craft must find time to offer their services in public schools. And above all, the new generation must thrust themselves into the world of public policy and government. Many Asian and Hispanic groups comprised of wealthy members and donors say some of it is already underway and good work is being done by people of color. But most of the good work currently is focused on their respective communities. It is not permeated across the region to make a bigger impact. As the area grows in population and wealth, so will our needs. As a community, we may have to rely even more on people of color who are shining and prospering during tumultuous times. Now, that's a story we want to tell. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by Managing Editor Dane Huffman. Deer become common in North Carolina. If you've seen deer in your backyard munching on your begonias, you aren't alone. The number of deer in the state's urban areas appears to be rising, so much so that a group of NC State University researchers is studying the issue and its implications. Deer were so overhunted in the 1800s that by 1900, the population across the state was a mere 10,000, according to estimates from the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission. Mariah Bogus, a deer biologist with the commission, says the state made concerted efforts in the 20th century to restore deer to parts of the state and to reduce hunting so they could flourish. Now, he says, an estimated 1 million white-tailed deer live in the huntable areas of North Carolina. But because the commission relies on data from hunting, it's hard to say exactly how many deer live in the state's urban and suburban areas, he says. In populated areas, deer found themselves quite adaptable to humans and, without the threat of hunters, have thrived, as Facebook photos of deer on the Raleigh Greenway and grazing in backyards makes clear. So the commission developed a project and hired experts at NC State to study the matter. How are the deer adapting? How are the people and businesses adapting? And significantly, how much tolerance do people have for deer brazenly wandering across their front yards? The four-year project, which has updates on its Triangle Urban Deer Study Facebook page, has targeted Durham County because of its mix of urban and rural areas. One researcher, NC State professor Niels Peterson, says the goal is to talk to 400 businesses for feedback, and they've spoken to about 150 so far. A big question is how to manage the rising deer population. Homeowners can avoid plants that attract deer, but fencing out deer who are basically Olympic high jumpers with antlers is difficult. You can't put big fences everywhere, Peterson says. Of course, collisions between cars and deer can be a real risk, and those incidents will rise as deer become more common. But the fact is, deer are quite adaptable. Are quite capable of surviving, even thriving, in suburbs, as long as they have leafy plants to keep them fed. Deer are adaptable to human-altered environment, NC State professor Chris Mormon says. Part of the goal of our project is to understand if there are thresholds. New firm launches targets government. An experienced pair of government affairs consultants have launched a new venture, HSB Advantage LLC, with offices in Raleigh, at the Dillon, in the Warehouse District. Teresa Kostrezwa, founder of Capital Advantage Associates, is combining with Hainsworth Sinclair Boyd, a law firm with offices across South Carolina. HSB Advantage will advise clients on legislative, policy, and economic development matters. Kostrezwa's involvement dates back to 1992, when she managed the campaign of Judge Robert Orr for the North Carolina Court of Appeals. Kostrezwa, Lisa Martin, and William McKinney will lead the HSB Advantage team, and Kostrezwa says calls North Carolina a premier venue globally for doing business. Fenton Vibe gets national attention. Fenton, Cary's crown jewel mixed-use development, is receiving national recognition for its tenant mix and overall experience. The 92-acre project ranked number 3 on the list of 2023's top 10 retail experiences by chain store age. An article on the decision nods to Fenton's mix of chef-driven restaurants, green spaces, event programming, and location in a well-to-do suburban enclave in the Research Triangle. The first phase of Fenton features 345,000 square feet of retail space, 200,000 square feet of office, and 357 apartments. And a second phase is already in the works. A 175-key hotel is planned, with developers Hines and Columbia Development in talks with a hotel partner. Though plans for a grocery store are still wavering, as the article notes, after Wegmans nixed its plans for the development, still the development boasts several popular retailers, including Sephora, Lululemon, Athleta, PBR Cowboy Bar, and Williams-Sonoma. As Kurt Hartman, senior director at Hines, told CSA, "It's a vibe." Another blow for Eastern North Carolina. Another hospital in eastern North Carolina has closed as hospitals throughout the U.S., and especially those in rural areas, are facing significant financial challenges. On August 3, Martin General Hospital in Williamston suspended operations and filed for bankruptcy, citing financial challenges related to declining populations and utilization trends. Martin General is the 12th rural hospital in the state to close since January 2005, according to data from the Cecil G. Shepp Center for Health Services Research at UNC Chapel Hill. Nationwide, the center identifies 196 rural hospitals that have closed during that time, many based in the South and Southeast. In its bankruptcy filing, the hospital lists its estimated assets as between $1 million and $10 million, and its estimated liabilities as between $10 million and $50 million. NC Beaches, great investments. If you're looking to buy a beach house, you live in the right state. Three North Carolina coastal localities were ranked in the top 10 for best places to buy a beach house, according to Vacasa, a vacation rental management platform. Vacasa created its rankings based off which areas had the highest cap rates or annual rate of return on investment. Hatteras Island snagged the number 2 spot in Vacasa's list, with the cap rate for the area being 9.5%. Only Lake Anna, Virginia, ranked higher on the list with a cap rate of 12.1%. Meanwhile, Surf City and North Topsail Beach snagged the 5th and 8th spots on the list, respectively, with respective cap rates of 5.8% and 5.3%. And finally, Star plans a trip to Cary. Legendary jazz fusion guitarist John McLaughlin is coming to Cary. McLaughlin, whose career spans more than 50 years playing with musicians such as Miles Davis and drummer Tony Williams, is bringing his East-West fusion group Shakti to the Coca Booth Amphitheater on August 27 as part of Shakti's 50th anniversary world tour. Rolling Stone magazine ranked McLaughlin 49th among the world's top 100 guitarists of all time. McLaughlin gave guitar lessons to Led Zeppelin's Jimmy Page and formed a band with Cream's Jack Bruce in the 1960s. Assisting McLaughlin includes the world's most renowned tabla player, Zakir Hussain, with special guest Bella Fleck, a banjo player who is a 15-time Grammy Award winner. And now we turn to the top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one is written by Zach Ezone. Urgent care company with ties to Blue Cross NC selling off clinics. As competition increases amid widespread consolidation in the healthcare sector, North Carolina's largest insurer does not want to be left behind. Like other insurance companies expanding into the delivery of healthcare, Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina may be looking to acquire FastMed Urgent Care's clinics within North Carolina. There are 55 total in the coming weeks. Blue Cross NC, more than a decade ago, invested about $5 million, according to sources familiar with the insurer's business strategy, into the urgent care company to own a minority stake in FastMed. In 2015, Avery Partners in Boston acquired FastMed's network of urgent care centers from Florida-based Comvest Partners. Sources estimate Blue Cross's payout was substantial and multiple times its original investment, but Blue Cross did not cash out completely. Sources recalled the insurer reinvested more than $15 million into FastMed operations for a minority stake it still owns to date. Blue Cross officials dispute the financials regarding the transactions. Now, the insurer may be looking to buy a bigger stake. A spokeswoman for the Durham-based insurer says no decisions have been made regarding a deal to acquire FastMed's urgent care clinics in North Carolina. Any changes to Blue Cross NC's existing collaboration with FastMed would be consistent with all regulatory requirements and focused on how to make affordable, quality health care easier to access and navigate in North Carolina, she says. As of August 8, officials at the North Carolina Department of Insurance say the agency has not received any paperwork related to a potential deal involving Blue Cross NC and FastMed. Today, FastMed is a portfolio company of an investment firm with connections to Blue Cross NC. Echo Health Ventures was formed in 2016 through the combination of Oregon-based Cambia Health Solutions and Mosaic Health Solution, a subsidiary of Blue Cross NC. Tunde Satunde, Blue Cross NC's president and CEO, serves on Echo Health's board of directors. And our next story is written by Ben Tobin. Gun shop moves to Youngsville. Rising rent leads gun manufacturer to buy warehouse. A gun and ammo manufacturer with a warehouse in Raleigh is moving north to avoid higher rents. Pitcher Properties, an LLC tied to California-based Dirty Bird Guns and Ammo, purchased a building in the Franklin County Industrial Center earlier this month for roughly $6.5 million, according to county deed records. Jay Pitcher, co-founder of Dirty Bird Guns and Ammo, says the company originally registered as an LLC in California in 2017 and manufactured and sold firearms and ammo at a store in the city of Bakersfield. It expanded operations into North Carolina in 2021 because California is not the most friendly place to conduct business if you're in the firearms industry, Pitcher says. The family-owned company has been leasing a 52,000-square-foot warehouse at a business center in Northeast Raleigh for its e-commerce operations, but with the lease expiring next year and rental rates going up, Pitcher says he looked for a new space to house the operation and landed on a lot in Franklin County, in the Franklin County Industrial Center at 400 Park Avenue off U.S. Highway 1 in Youngsville. Rather than re-upping with that lease, we decided to look for a building to buy, Pitcher says. There wasn't really much available on the market for the space we needed, so we feel fortunate to have found this location. In the current warehouse, which the company is subleasing, Pitcher says they pay about $6.25 per square foot per year, resulting in a monthly rent of roughly $27,000. To re-up at the location, the company would have had to sign a minimum of a 7-year lease at around $10 to $12 per square foot per year, meaning monthly rental rates could have risen as high as $55,000, and rental rates could have risen 3% annually, Pitcher says. The new warehouse for Dirty Bird is 56,000 square feet and houses operations for White Street Brewing Company of Wake Forest, according to Pitcher. Dirty Bird, which has roughly 30 employees in North Carolina and generated $33 million in its most recent fiscal year ending, March 31, 2023, will move into the new space in December, per Pitcher. Average asking rates for warehouse space in the Raleigh-Durham market were $9.60 per square foot to end the second quarter, according to Colliers. Vacancy rates have been ticking up this year as new space is delivered. Warehouse vacancy increased to 6.25% in the second quarter, compared to 5.8% the quarter prior, according to Triangle Business Journal's most recent space publication. New homes to rise in Zebulon after GSK land deal. This article is written by Kaylee Thompson. A new residential community is being planned near GSK's Zebulon facility after the pharma company sold land. An LLC addressed to Ten Oaks Homes, a custom home builder based in Maryland, bought about 70 acres for $2.4 million on July 28, according to Wake County deed records. Glaxo, which later became GSK after multiple mergers, acquired the land in the early 1980s. A GSK spokesperson says GSK did not have a future use for the land, which is just south of a major manufacturing facility that plays a pivotal role in GSK's respiratory business. Fred Sheckles, managing partner for Ten Oaks, says the company is developing the land and Ryan Holmes will build the homes. The development will have 293 homes, 175 townhomes, and 118 single-family homes, all for sale. Ten Oaks is working with the town of Zebulon on rezoning it from industrial light to residential, along with what the town is looking for with the homes. Shekels said with the town's architecture requirements and amenity package that the homes will be on the higher end of pricing for homes in Zebulon. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal, starting with Lauren Onosorge's page on tech and finance. Studio rising despite turmoil in industry. Hollywood strike hasn't derailed studio plans in Wilmington. The sound stages in Wilmington are dark as the Hollywood strike lingers, but in the port city, big plans are in the works. Kirk Engelbright, founder and CEO of Dark Horse Studio, says a wave is coming and his company is getting ready for the ride. Dark Horse Studios is building the first new purpose-built film studio the state has seen in more than 40 years. Our new state-of-the-art stages will be coming online in 12 months, he says, about the $20 million project. This strike, in the grand scheme of things, is making for a huge pent-up demand for more content. More content means more productions, more feature films, more TV, more people working, more jobs created. We see it firsthand when these productions come in, he says. Wilmington has long been known as Hollywood East, hosting productions such as Dawson's Creek and One Tree Hill. For decades, EUE Screen Gems has been the only major player. Enter Dark Horse Studios. Engelbright and his partner, father-in-law Rodney Long, were looking for new opportunities in commercial real estate. In 2019, they purchased the former Coastal Beverage Company facility off Market Street for $4.8 million, and they quickly found a tenant with a larger employer in northeastern North Carolina. 3 months after the purchase came COVID-19. The deal fell through. And then a Hallmark film production called. We were thinking it was just a fluke, but that it was great we had a tenant, Engelbright says. Hallmark could fill the void for a few months, he says. Before the project was over, another film project signed on. And then another, and another. That domino effect has been taking place for the last 3 years, Engelbright says. Insurers seek 50% rate hike on dwelling insurance. Owning a beach house could get more costly in 2024. The NC Rate Bureau is looking to increase dwelling insurance rates by an eye-popping 50.6% starting next year for owners of second homes. Dwelling insurance policies are not homeowners insurance policies. Instead, they are offered to non-owner-occupied residences of no more than 4 units, including rental and vacation properties. Rising property values coupled with inflation has insurance companies pushing for relief. If the request is ultimately approved by the NC Department of Insurance, it would take effect June 1st. But that approval is doubtful. Insurance Commissioner Mike Causey wouldn't say definitively what the outcome could be regarding the Rate Bureau's request. There's a procedure in place that includes public comments and a hearing. But he did say the Rate Bureau would have a tough time to justify anywhere close to what they've requested. That's a big request. That's all I can say, he says. In August 2022, the Rate Bureau requested an average statewide increase of 42.6%. After negotiation, NCDOI and the Rate Bureau reached a compromise, raising rates by an average of 9.9%. And finally, Bandwidth upbeat after earnings. Top executives at Bandwidth, customers are being shrewd in the uncertain environment, but that it's still in line to benefit from the opportunity ahead, particularly driven by AI. We just continue to see choppiness generally, CEO David Morkin said August 3rd after his communication software company reported better than expected earnings. Morkin told analysts that AI would ultimately enhance the user experience or contact center experience for lots of our customers for good reasons. Bandwidth increased its revenue guidance for the full year to $590 million to reflect first half revenue overachievement. And now we turn to Zach Ezone's page on healthcare and higher ed. Raleigh practice opts out of urgent care. Wake Internal Medicine Group saw lower interest at sites. A longtime healthcare practice in Raleigh has closed the urgent care center at its two offices. It's a decision that Wake Internal Medicine Consultants has considered for a few years. Chief Administrative Officer Matt Johnson says the urgent care centers were never a major profit generator for the physician practice, but they offered a way for patients to meet with physicians outside of their normal hours, a service that can be facilitated in other ways, like through telemedicine. The practice began seeing a decline in the number of patients visiting the urgent care centers prior to the pandemic. Part of the challenge was competing with urgent care services of larger health systems such as UNC Health and Wake Med, in addition to other companies like FastMed or CVS. The practice kept the centers open during the pandemic with the intention of using the sites to administer COVID-19 tests and vaccines. But patient numbers never saw a rebound, with the centers some days seeing only about 8 to 10 patients over 12 hours. That's less than half the visits needed to support operating the centers, Johnson says. As a result, the centers weren't breaking even, leading the practice to lean on its main services to subsidize its urgent care offerings. "We felt that it was time to quit bleeding money and use that space in a better way," Johnson says. The practice on July 14 closed the urgent care centers at both its main office on Blue Ridge Road and an office in North Raleigh on Durant Road. Most employees at the centers were assigned to other areas of the practice, with a few physician assistant positions eliminated as a result of the closures. Johnson says the practice helped these individuals secure jobs at other healthcare facilities in the area. While the urgent care business may have struggled, the practice is growing overall, Johnson says. Wake Internal Medicine, which includes 35 providers focused on primary care and multiple specialties, brought on a new primary care physician about a year ago who is already at capacity with patients. This demand for primary care and specialty services was part of Wake Internal Medicine's decision to close urgent care centers. Intuitive Surgical to shut Durham facility. A multi-billion dollar company that develops robotic surgical systems is shutting down a manufacturing facility in Durham. Intuitive Surgical will end existing operations at the site by the end of the year, leading to potential layoffs of up to 91 employees. The company on August 2nd informed the NC Department of Commerce the facility, located at 1650 TW Alexander Drive, will shut down. In its notice to the state, Intuitive says it's shifting operations to an East Coast hub in Peachtree Corners, Georgia. The company didn't respond to requests for comment. Intuitive in 2021 unveiled plans to invest more than $500 million to create a regional headquarters in Georgia that will employ 1,200 people. The campus, expected to be complete in 2024, includes six buildings totaling more than 750,000 square feet. And finally, Worldwide Clinical Trials gets new owner. Kohlberg & Company has entered an agreement to acquire Worldwide Clinical Trials from the private equity firm TJC. Terms of the deal, which is expected to close in the fourth quarter, have not been disclosed. Kohlberg invests in companies across multiple sectors, including pharmaceutical and business services, with enterprise values between $200 million and $2 billion. Kohlberg's equity investments range from $100 million to $500 million. After the deal is complete, Kohlberg operating partner Matt Jennings will become chairman of Worldwide's board of directors. TJC will retain a minority stake in Worldwide, a contract research organization in Research Triangle Park. And now we turn to the On Retail and Restaurants page, written by Laura Brumette. Former farm building to be transformed. Wake Forest project adds new bar, more retail downtown. Raleigh developer Atlas Stark is turning a decades-old farming building in Wake Forest into retail, dining, and office space. The structure, located at 535 South White Street, was built in 1962 and was formerly an agricultural supply warehouse. The 16,000-square-foot building's remodel will be food and beverage-centric, with a mix of retail and office tenants as well. Jason Howard, a local hospitality entrepreneur, has signed on to bring the Cardinal Bar to the development. His first location of the bar opened in downtown Raleigh in 2016, followed by locations in Wilson and Clayton. He recently opened two other concepts in downtown Raleigh. The Rainbow Luncheonette and Pink Boot, both are now closed. The Wake Forest project, named 535 Warehouse, is set to have shell renovations completed by the end of the year, according to Atlas Stark managing partner Trey Adams. Tenants are slated for move-in in the spring and summer. Initial interest has been strong, Adams says. We expect the finished product to be food and beverage centric, but we'll have a mix of retail, office, and food and beverage space, Adams says. Atlas Stark Materials lists lease rates at $28 per square foot. Spaces range from 1,600 square feet to 13,500 square feet. The number of total tenants is currently unknown, Adams says. The project will also include outdoor dining space and parking. The building sits on 1.75 acres adjacent to the newly opened loading dock co-working space. Atlas Stark purchased the property for $1.25 million in 2021. Atlas Stark, founded in 2017, has several ongoing projects in the Triangle, including East End Market in Midtown Raleigh, and plans to bring more than 50,000 square feet of commercial space to Knightdale Station in eastern Wake County. Durham County pays $12 million for aging strip mall. Durham County bought the shops at Hope Valley Shopping Center for $12.14 million and plans to bring county offices to the center. The purchase was approved by the county in 2022 and completed recently. The center is located at 3825 South Roxborough Street and was previously anchored by a Kroger store. Kroger left the space as part of its exit from the market in 2018. The 54,000 square foot anchor spot has remained empty since. And finally, new sports bar coming to Apex. The Glory Days Grill location in Apex is closed, but the spot will soon reopen as a new concept. Mike Montgomery, owner of the Abbey Road Tavern brand, has purchased the business with plans to turn it into the Dugout Tavern and Grill. The restaurant is located at 1413 Kelly Road in the Publix Point Shopping Center. A trio of local franchisees opened the spot as Glory Days Grill in 2017. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Kaylee Thompson. Kane reveals details for key developments, projects to rise near Dix Park and also on edge of downtown. Kane Realty Corporation has unveiled new details and renderings for large projects reshaping parts of Raleigh with new housing, office, dining, and shops. The Raleigh company has revealed the name of the residential buildings in phases 1 and 2 of its development by Dorothea Dix Park, along with updated construction timelines. And across the railroad tracks from downtown, Kane is transforming the former headquarters of the Clancy and Thays Construction Company. Rockway Raleigh is the new name of Kane's Park City South development off South Saunders Street at Lake Wheeler Road, across from Dix Park. The first phase is the Rockway Residences, a seven-story mixed-use building with 335 apartments and 18,000 square feet of ground floor retail and flex office space. We envision the retail at Rockway to be food and beverage centric with some services and creative office tenants mixed in, says Josie Reeves, Director of Design with Kane Realty. We have taken great care to design interesting storefronts and to create massive amounts of outdoor dining along both South Saunders Street and directly on the Rocky Branch Creek Greenway Trail using raised patios, creating the opportunity for Rockway retail tenants to be a true destination on the Greenway. Phase 2 of the Rockway Raleigh development is the Heath, a 350-unit residential building rising 6 stories with 7,000 square feet of ground floor retail space. A second residential building with 200 units will also be part of Phase 2. The Heath amenities will be a rooftop lounge, swimming pool, fitness center, bicycle storage, and courtyard. The retail space will be along South Saunders Street with connections to the Rockway residences. New homes come with rare price for ITB. Townhomes starting in the $300,000s are planned near Raleigh Country Club inside the Beltline. RDU Consulting, a PLLC associated with real estate developer and broker Johnny Chappell, is working with construction company Concept 8 of Apex on 35 townhome-style condominiums on two parcels to the east of Raleigh Country Club on Pool Road. Chappell says the company wants to provide workforce-type housing. Home prices in Raleigh have soared in recent years, creating an affordability crisis. The three-story homes will feature three bedrooms. There will be six buildings total on 2.57 acres. The subdivision plan shows there will be 10,471 square feet of amenity area provided, but Chapel says the company hasn't decided what that will be. It could be a dog park or walking trails. And finally, new apartments planned near Fenton. A Minnesota developer has targeted Cary for a residential development north of Fenton. Opidian Investment Company filed new site plans for 186 apartments on East Chatham Street. The apartments will be near the intersection of Chatham Street and Southeast Maynard Road and near the Wake Med Soccer Park. Site plans show the apartments will be spread across six buildings with 76 one-bedroom units, 101 two-bedroom units, and 9 three-bedroom units. Amenities include a clubhouse, swimming pool, fitness room, yoga room, co-working area, conference room, pet spa, kitchenette, multi-purpose room, and 14,635 square feet of community gathering space. And our last reporter page is written by Ben Tobin on Greater Triangle Growth. One of NC's oldest golf courses for sale, Willow Springs Club in Wilson, has a history dating back to 1915. A 108-year-old golf course in eastern North Carolina is on the market. Willow Springs Country Club in Wilson, located off Highway 301 south of town, hit the market late last year for almost $4 million, according to John Powell, president of Raleigh's Phoenix Commercial Properties, the broker for the property. The golf course was established in 1915. Jimmy and Paula Gerken bought the property for $600,000 in 1989, according to Wilson County property records, and have owned and operated it since as a semi-private club. Famed golf course architect Ellis Maples designed the greens at the course, which was inspired by the work of Donald Ross. The par 71 course plays more than 6,600 yards. Powell says that potential suitors for the property include home builders and developers interested in creating a mixed residential neighborhood with single-family housing and a separate higher density option, but others have explored the land for commercial and industrial purposes, and the land could still remain a golf course, but with a different owner, per Powell. We've had quite a few conversations with a bunch of different potential buyers, Powell says. This is a tremendous opportunity. The golf course is still operating, per Powell, and will continue to do so until a buyer who wants to use the land differently closes on the deal for the land. That process could take years, as a buyer would need to receive rezoning and site plan approval before any project could move forward. While Willow Springs is on the market, another course in Wilson was recently sold. In May, Raleigh's McConnell Golf, a company that owns and operates private clubs across the region, acquired the Wilson Country Club for an undisclosed price. The property is located at 4509 Country Club Drive on the northern edge of Wilson. Illinois investor grabs land near Clayton. An Illinois investment firm is making a splash near Clayton. Wiley Capital purchased 15.76 acres for $2 million in late July, per county deed records. The land sits off U.S. 70 business south of Pony Farm Road. Jason Simon, founder of Wiley Capital, says the company plans to create a first-class industrial development on the land. The company is looking to rezone the property from business highway and residential estate to industrial heavy. According to Wiley Capital's website, the planned development can accommodate up to 160,000 square feet of new Class A space. The total project cost is $25 million. We greatly believe in the Johnston County market, Simon says. To us, it's pretty obvious that as infrastructure improvements continue around the area, Johnston County will continue to attract new employment centers. And finally, 188 townhomes are planned for Sanford. A growing city in the Greater Triangle is set to get another subdivision. Mark Lukowski, a Sanford real estate investor, requested a conditional rezoning earlier this year for more than 27 acres off Carbondon Road in Sanford to build a 188-townhome community. According to city documents, the property is currently owned by Mad M&R, an LLC tied to Lukowski and a few other real estate investors. The subdivision will be called Elizabeth Landing, and Raleigh's Timmons Group is the engineering firm for the project, according to city documents. Mad M&R is listed as the developer. And now we'll read the big number sections sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal. The first one, $40.9 billion. The amount of deposits in the Silicon Valley Bank segment First Citizens reported on its earnings call August 3rd, that's relatively stable from the $41.4 billion disclosed in May. The next one is $1 billion. That's the size of the cut Pfizer made to the higher end of its revenue projections for the year. The company expects revenue to reach $70 billion instead of the $71 billion it previously projected. $79 million. That's how much the legacy at Wakefield Apartments in North Raleigh sold for to an LP addressed to CBRE Investment Management, according to Wake County deed records. The seller was Carter Haston Real Estate Services, who bought it in 2014 for $50 million. And our last big number is $1.5 million, the rough amount Charlotte area home builder True Homes paid for 18 lots in the Copper Ridge subdivision in Flowers Plantation, a 3,000-acre mixed-use community in Johnston County. And now we turn to the quotable sections sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal, starting with Mike Burling, Vice President of Sports Business at Capital Broadcasting, on the company's further investment in the North Carolina Courage Women's Soccer Club in Cary. The team just completed a $15 million equity raise and makes Capital Broadcasting the second largest equity owner behind Stephen Malik. With the TV and radio that we have as part of our umbrella, that's going to be an important part of growing the game as much as we can. And next we have Gustavo Pesquin, new CEO of Asclepios Biopharmaceutical, and his decision to join one of the most prominent gene therapy companies in the Triangle. When you look at what is happening in the world of gene therapy, we're starting to see not these incremental changes, but truly transformational changes in the lives of patients. Next, we have Autumn Hicks, owner of Mon Macaron, on the bakery's new location in Cary. The shop at 312 West Chatham Street is the second for the brand, with a production facility also coming soon. Downtown is growing like crazy, and they have the new park coming. We found this location, and it's walkable to everything. And next, we have Marianne Baldwin, City of Raleigh Mayor. What I look at is density. Location. I want to see things built on transit corridors. I want to see unutilized land reimagined, so that takes vision. I want to see neighborhoods come back again, especially in downtown. And finally, we have Brian Stading, CEO of Lumos, on investing more than $50 million to expand fiber optic internet services to Johnston and Harnett counties. It's the fastest growing area of North Carolina. We're excited about being able to bring broadband not only now, but also for the future. And we'll end with the Business Pulse survey. The question, would you support a casino coming to Eastern North Carolina? Total responses, 146. 69% say yes, while 31% say no. And we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.